Okay, welcome back, everyone. Calling us back to order. I have it at 1:25. Okay, back to the agenda tab, still A through C. I think we're now on teacher certification. Is that right?
No. Bridge plan.
No, we're back to the bridge plan.
Okay.
So I'm going to turn it back to Dr. Williamson and Dr. Strader to talk about that. And that's in the same, that's right behind your graduation document. You'll have that information.
So you had asked for some information about Bridge, and you wanted a little bit of background. We've put in a little bit of background about its purpose, and then we gave you some data, because that's what I think that you wanted to see. But I just want to remind you why we have Bridge in place, and that was because we recognized early when we had our HSA assessments that there were some students that really had a need for an alternative pathway to getting to graduation in terms of a different way of being assessed, because not all students are good at sitting in front of tests. There's test anxiety. There's students that have ELL, that are ELL students. There's special needs students. And we wanted an alternative. The deal was, and it's written in the guidelines that you saw on the reg, the deal was we could provide Bridge, which is an instructional opportunity where we talk about the indicators that are connected to the assessment. We talk about those, we reinforce them, but the student still had to take the assessment again. It was really about taking the assessment and giving them some opportunity to practice skills that they needed to have for that. And they had to take it at least twice before they were able to even count the Bridge assessment. So I just want to make that clear that our intent was always that students take the assessment. Problem was, we knew there were some students that may at the end really not be able to be accommodated by that assessment and would need another alternative. You were also concerned about how rigorous those projects were. And we said we would bring you some information. And I'm not going to read everything on this page and the next one, except to tell you that a lot of work went into taking the old projects that were aligned to the HSA and then looking at the Maryland College and Career Ready standards for each of those areas, making sure that these assessments were upgraded in terms of rigor and that they were targeting the appropriate indicators. And they were revised. They were sent out to be worked on by teachers across the state. There were a few people in each of the systems that tried them. They came back. They revised them again last summer. They went back out again to be used and they were piloted, essentially. And so they feel they have really good assessments that are going to get at the indicators that should be targeted for each of the assessments. That being said, that was the intent. That's how we believe we have rigorous projects that are in place to support the assessment program. So then when you go to the next page, you would ask that's the getting them in place. I feel you've heard enough of us right now. But the piece of data that you wanted was to really show you how our data looked in terms of numbers of students who passed Bridge. So passed with Bridge. Do you want to deal with that?
Yeah. So looking at the data here, you can see. Now, one thing to keep in mind is we've undergone transition in our assessment program. So as we've sunsetted Algebra 1, English 10, we transitioned from HSA to PARC. We've had some requirements to participate, not pass. But either way, I just want to walk you through the timeline for this. The data that you're seeing here are the percent of students who satisfy graduation requirements via a Bridge project. This doesn't define whether it's one project or three projects. And so you're just seeing the students that met the graduation requirement via Bridge. So going back in time, you can see that's included here from the 10-12 school year, 10-11 school year. You're looking at roughly 9.8 to 2014-15 school year, depending on about 11% per student. Now, again, this is across the entire state. If you look at the district level, you're going to see clusters of where this is occurring. But for the most part, we feel fairly confident that we're in the position of being able to provide these in the districts for students that truly need them for adverse reasons, where the assessment situation itself is just too troubling for the students. Also, keep in mind, when we were talking earlier about the accountability program, the Bridge programs do not contribute to ESSA. In other words, only the assessments themselves are contributing to ESSA, with the exception of graduation, of course. But this does not replace the Algebra 1 test for what we report to the federal government. These do not replace the Algebra 1, the English 10 tests, and so on and so forth. This is only to satisfy the graduation requirement for students. So schools and districts that wish to engage the bridge projects are doing so to assist students with graduation, but that does not contribute to their federal compliance, their ESSA requirements. Does that make sense? Some heads there that are shaking, because there was a question earlier about how bridge fits into federal accountability. So they are separated in that regard. But either way, here's your percentages. Again, you're looking at the percent of students, roughly 10% per year, that are getting through with bridge.
Can you talk about AYP and its impact up until 2012, what that deal was?
Before you do that, Pastor Phillips, do you have a question?
So I have a couple of questions. When I got this in our board book the few days ago, I had to look at the district numbers because it overwhelmed me how disproportionately represented they are across the state, which means to me that either Prince George's County and Baltimore City has a very large number of students with disabilities or 504 plans or ELL students or students who have test anxiety, or something seems weird to me that this number is so great in just a small portion of our districts. So can you explain to me who determines how students get into a bridge program? What is the process of that?
There is a guideline, I think that's in the reg, that it says students must have passed the class and failed the test. Those are the only students that can be given a bridge project.
Passed which
they have
class?
To have passed the class for which the bridge project would be in place. So if it was Algebra 1 or if it was their science assessment, biology, government, or U.S. history, or
they failed the assessment.
They passed the class.
Passed the
course.
Class.
They passed the course.
Okay,
but they failed the assessment.
If you
those
go back
the
to
students.
the regs document
right.
that we
there.
Were looking at earlier on page
Correct.
Five,
right?
This stuff is at the top,
right?
On page five.
Are you still? Okay. How did they pass the class and failed the test? I mean, I know the answer, and I'm just trying to be rhetorical on this.
Well, I mean, but that
Thank
makes,
you.
We've
yeah.
had many students that have
But this
passed.
Large percentage, though.
I can't yeah. speak to that unless I yeah. speak to that county and talk to them about it. But there are a number of students that can pass a class, and at the end of the year, they don't really care about the assessment, so they don't try. That's been a problem across final exams. If you remember, there's been a big discussion about final exams mm-hmm. in a number of districts in the past couple of years. It was in the newspaper. Depends on if students take the assessment seriously. That could be a piece of it. I can't really speak specifically unless I speak specifically to those systems.
So the teacher determines whether or not a student...
The student has determined it by passing the class, and any student that passed the class would be encouraged to take the assessment again. However, would have an opportunity that they could, the staff could say, we think they need to take bridge.
Okay, what I'm trying to discover is if I'm a student and I know that I could pass my class but fail my tests mm-hmm. and still graduate, mm-hmm. what incentive is there for me to even try to mm-hmm. pass the test?
Dr. Guyton.
I think it might be helpful if you could give us an example of what some of these bridge programs look like, because I know we had a presentation on that last year, and the incentive is that these bridge programs are a huge, effortful process.
Sure.
And I think that the idea behind them is that they really do show demonstrated mastery of the materials, and they take much longer and require much more effort than the test.
Yeah.
So it's not like an easy way out.
No.
That's,
I'm not suggesting
okay, hopefully that answers.
Yeah, I'm not suggesting there's an easy way out, nor am I suggesting that it's some sort of malicious intent. I'm saying that it seems as though that there is a disproportionate number represented in a few districts against the rest of our state, mm-hmm. which is troublesome to me because most of these districts are going to represent and reflect people who look like me. And therefore, I see that as an absolute problem as to why it is possible here, but not everywhere else. That's a large number.
May I say one more thing about the program? So I know I can only speak from Queen Anne's County, but I know it was developed much like anyone else's bridge program. We had to schedule it within the day. We had to find a way to schedule it for students within the day. They had instruction by a teacher using the materials that had been developed, and then they completed these projects, which were taken by another group of teachers that were in that area of responsibility. So it could be math teachers would score the math projects. Under the guidance of the supervisor in my county, they scored them, and then the superintendent or designee would have to review them to see that they were appropriate. And I can remember a number of them that got sent back to be redone for some students. So it's not that it's an easy process. It is rather rigorous. I just want you to understand that piece of it.
I don't think, and I could be wrong, I don't think Pastor Phillips is questioning the project and the quality of it. It's just, it's a bunch of our people having to do these projects, and that concerns us.
Correct.
I think that's what he's saying.
To my point, if let me argue it the converse way. If a teacher then decides, that's why I'm trying to figure out who decides whether or not you get into a bridge program. Is it just a student or is it the teacher?
I think it's teacher recommended, but I would have to look to my...
Okay, so if a teacher then decides in their own mind, which is possible, I'm not suggesting this is true, that they're not capable of passing the assessment and then chooses for the student just because they failed one time?
No, I think really what happens is they decide that this student would benefit by this additional instruction.
Okay.
And we're still going to ask that student to take the assessment again, but they will have had additional opportunity to review that material, those standards that they had not been successful in.
But they don't have to pass the assessment. They just have to take it again. Is that right?
No, they have to take it. We hope they will take it and pass it again. The idea is always for them to take it and pass it.
They don't have
to. But this gives them additional instruction in it.
Okay.
Now, if after the second time they don't pass it,
right,
our reg says they can use their bridge score, if they pass that, as a means to accomplish.
Okay. So everybody's clear, and this is for my own understanding. This is not to suggest anything malicious.
All right.
I do not understand how that only 11% of our students across the state are in a bridge program. However, 37% of that number is reflected in Baltimore City. 27% of that number is reflected in PG County.
Yeah.
That seems like a problem to me. And that's what I'm trying to drill down on.
I understand.
Dr. Steiner?
I would have to go to those systems and talk about it.
So for me, the key figure is missing here. What percentage of students who take a bridge project fail to get credit for the bridge project towards graduation?
I would say a very small percent.
Thank you. I do not share my colleagues' confidence in this project at all, because any requirement which has a vanishingly small percentage of those failing has no standards.
Dr. Finn.
A couple of things. One is that it's standard practice in states that have assessment-based graduation to both give kids multiple chances to take the assessment and to give kids who don't pass the assessment the first time extra support before they take it a second time or a third time. So that's standard practice. It is also fairly standard practice to have some kind of an alternative pathway for kids who, for one reason or another, cannot pass the assessment. Normally, when there are alternative pathways, this is also true on most large-scale testing programs, there is a cap on how many children can qualify for that alternative pathway. Federal government, as I recall, allowed up to 3% on the No Child Left Behind assessments because of disability issues. Reasonable, it seemed to me. Why is there no cap on the percent of children who may graduate via bridge in Maryland?
Is that rhetorical? I'm sorry. You know, because I don't know what the thinking was at the time the reg was completed, but I do know that we had a concern about number of students that would need an alternative way of being assessed because of the high school assessments, and that was back when that was developed.
The kids, the 37% that Pastor Phillips mentioned, who graduated in Baltimore City because of the bridge program means they failed the assessment a second time.
At least.
Yes.
At least.
Therefore,
at least
it was
twice.
Therefore, it was the
at
bridge program that substituted for ever passing the. Do we know how many children who go into the bridge program because they failed the assessment the first time then pass the assessment the second time?
I don't, but I think
they wouldn't be included here.
Yeah, I know that, but there's a larger number than 37% who go into the bridge program. Some of them then pass the assessment.
So the history of the bridge, typically the bridge was a decision that would a counselor would encounter with the student as they're entering into that final year of their experience, their senior year, say. They've failed the test usually multiple times prior to then. If they had taken Algebra 1 their freshman year, they would have been able to experience five separate administrations of that test, freshman, sophomore, junior years, and so forth. I'm not saying that they took advantage of all of those opportunities, but they have multiple opportunities to take the test. Then engage in that conversation with that student that senior year and say, this is your graduation requirements, checking off, you've done all these things, your service credits, and so on and so forth. Now we need to focus on getting you through this content area and this test. Part of the remediation would actually be the completion of the bridge project itself. You engage in a bridge project, it's an iterative process. Students completing the work's being scored, they fall short, the work goes back, they have to go back and forth to meet that standard that's required for the student to be able to get through the bridge. The student then takes the assessment that one last time after going through the process. If the student passes the assessment, the student meets the requirement outright and can contribute to the federal counts. If the student doesn't pass that assessment, then the bridge is used to supplement or replace, would you say, that assessment score for graduation requirements. But the student does not count towards your AYP, No Child Left Behind, or ESSA counts,
would you
say? I
understand that, but it does count toward graduation requirements. And this student has been given a diploma that may or may not signify something valuable in the real world.
Correct. Right. So the process has changed a little bit more recently in the sense that the way the projects are developed, they're excellent remedial tools now, and several of the districts have pushed to use this as the remediation to get students through. So you notice the changes today in the COMAR. Before, the student had to fail the assessment twice before engaging in bridge. Mm-hmm. Now the language is you can fail the first time, engage in a bridge, but you still can't count the use of that bridge program until you failed the assessment at least twice.
Right, I saw that. So let me come back to the question, which was a factual question. How many kids fail once, do bridge, and then pass the assessment?
We have to see if the systems could give us that number. I'm just going to remind you, this is just a question to you, do you believe that the assessment is the only way to show that a student has been successful in a program? Because I know they sat through 180 days of a program and completed the work for that program, or 90 days, however they're organized, and completed that program successfully. Could have been with all kinds of other kinds of assessments. They just didn't pass the last assessment, the final assessment, which is what our PARC assessment is supposed to be, a comprehensive assessment of the content that was taught. Now, do we believe that? I mean, if that's what we believe, that the assessment is really reflective of the whole year.
If that works for 95% of the kids in other districts, and then suddenly we see in our two low-income, low-performing districts that rule no longer holds, I think that's why you see some incredulity among some members here. I'm looking at if more than a third of kids in one district are graduating because of this and they can't pass the test. I mean, I think it's more than this is just a remediation tool. Maybe I'm being too cynical here.
I'm going to let him go, then I'm going to share a story.
So I have been in the unfortunate position on the Kerwin Commission of having to remind commissioners of Maryland's modest NAEP rankings, rankings which place us in the middle-lower area of the United States, despite the fact that this is the nation's wealthiest or second wealthiest state. I have to go back to my previous point because I think people were staring at the carpet. A remediation program that is not designed for our explicitly for special needs students who should get accommodation and who do get accommodation. We are talking about thousands of other students. A remediation program for high school graduation in which we have a vanishingly small failure rate is an outrage. There is no other word for it, because it takes every incentive away from everybody for achieving a passing score on a nationally normed test in which higher education has sat down with Park or Smarter Balanced, whatever else, and agreed on standards. And the fact that we have these extraordinary fail rates is on all of us. But it is simply to pass the buck in the most tragic way to say, oh, well, bridge project, and we know 99 or 98 or whatever the figure is, percent of the children will get through that way. I would ask the staff, as a point of information, to look across the United States and find another urban district. It can be Detroit, it can be St. Louis, it can be Philadelphia, I'm not talking about Boston, where there is an alternative assessment or pathway approved by the state, and give us the percentage in that district that get through to high school diplomas with that alternative pathway. Because I believe we are massively outliers in this policy.
To Phillips, share your story. Dr. Williamson, I do agree that one test after a year of work, and that's just for being in the education field, should not stifle a child from moving on. So I get what you're saying. My red flag is the high percentage of African Americans. I agree with you that one test should not define, but why is it such a high percentage of African-American communities that have to use this project? That concerns me.
To that point, I'll share this story only because it's relevant to what we're discussing, because it shows what not understanding what this is doing by allowing our children, and it's not an easy out, I don't want to say that, but a different pathway that requires them not to be held to a certain standard. Still a standard, but not a norm standard, right? And it wouldn't be a problem if the percentages wasn't, in my view, so inflated. But the problem I have is that the percentages are inflated, which brings me to this story. I won't name the school, nor the student, but I was at a school where we were celebrating the valedictorian. I won't give the GPA. It was much lower than I thought it would be. The student got a full scholarship to university. The university is irrelevant. I promised the student I would be there to help him into the system and so forth and make him have that transition to college. 2 months into university, he dropped out. The reason he dropped out was because he was not ready. How does the Bridge Project align with college and or career readiness? If we are choosing the path that is determining that we are supporting the fact that some of our kids are going to fail inevitably, because to me, this is what this sounds like, and then push them out into the world, they're not ready. And this kid is right now on the corner of North Avenue and Longwood when he had all the opportunity and chance in the world to make it. And I drive past him still sometimes and get out of my car and beg him to go back to school. But his hopes is dashed because he thought he had something. But when he got there, he realized he wasn't ready. This is a problem. And to me, I think we need to look at who determines if and when or how our children go into a Bridge Project. How rigorous is the Bridge Project? I don't know. Maybe you can give me that information. How rigorous is it?
We know it's not that hard because no one failed. No one failed it. It's the numbers are small. And are we creating a pathway of least resistance for our kids to get a diploma but not be ready for college and career? I'll end it there.
I think that was great, Pastor Phillips. It's almost like a separate but not equal track to get this diploma. And I don't just put it at the high school level. I think that we wouldn't have to create this path. Again, I'm not disputing the project itself because I remember some of the projects. They were excellent. But if we got the kids were able to be equipped at a very young age, we wouldn't have to come up with such creative ideas to get them across that stage. And that's the way we can have an equal, even footing. Our kids still aren't at an equal footing right now, and that concerns me. And Carol, we're not fussing at you. I know this is systemic. And it comes a point in time where we have to say that something has to be done. And we keep pointing at the problems, but we're not working towards solutions because something has to be done because, as Karen already pointed out, it's getting larger. The gaps are getting larger. Form kids are increasing. So we have to come together as a body, not just this body, but the General Assembly, the Governor's Office, and decide we're going to fight for our kids in Maryland.
You're right.
So can I suggest so what the additional data that you requested was, let's go through that so that we can come back when we do this next month. Dr. Steiner, you wanted the numbers of students that
graduate due to an alternative like
right.
this.
Okay.
Right?
In other places.
But then there was another question.
I wanted
question.
To know whether, since this was called remediation, I want to know whether there is any significant increase in the passing rate of the kids who fail the assessment right. the first that. Time, right. then do Bridge, and then take the assessment a second time.
Right.
How many of them pass the second time?
I have that question. I wrote that earlier.
Oh, and there was one more. It was, I think Dr. Steiner wanted to know, which, does anyone fail Bridge?
Yeah, what's the fail percentage?
Right.
Dr. Cahit might have.
Yeah, I'd like to look at the, I'd like for you to see how many of these kids are kids with special needs in this Bridge program, because
right.
my,
so disaggregate
I would
data.
Expect right. that there's a very high percentage and that's why they are needing this this safety net. Mm-hmm. And I think just to address also the reason I think that I believe that people don't fail Bridge very often is that is a closely monitored procedure. So there's a lot of back and forth remediation project so that they are not allowed to finish the project until it's been determined that they've actually passed it. So they actually keep working until they get to a certain standard.
Or it's sent back to them and they...
Right. So it's not that they're not failing. It's that they are getting chances to show that they've mastered the material until they pass. And there's a difference there.
Well,
then
I would like to hope that Dr. Guyton is correct with that, but I'd also like to know whether there's any psychometric equating of what is how does passing Bridge relate to passing the assessment yes. in terms of content and rigor.
That's right.
Okay. And then finally, I would like to add that we will need to contact the school systems with those highest percentages and ask them what their process is for Bridge.
Right.
Because
right.
I can't answer that, and so maybe we need them to answer that.
Right. I had that as well.
All right.
I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but I find this so alarming that I think the board needs to take seriously at minimum capping the percentage at which this can be used, if nothing else, as a forcing mechanism. The reason why I say that is earlier this morning we had a conversation about raising the standard on these tests. If we raise from 725 to 733 to 740 to 750 on some of these tests and there is no cap on the percentage of students who can use the Bridge, what's to tell us that 37% in Baltimore couldn't be 50 or 75% at some point, that we're raising standards for everyone else, and yet our most disadvantaged kids are being graduated through a process that is not meeting the standards that we take seriously.
And to that point, you can see on the graph the trend is trending up. Each year is ticking up. And if we implement the standards of what we were talking about, that's going to continue to trend up, and it's going to trend up for those that are in low-income households. And that's my point. And I pray that Dr. Guyton is right. I really do that it's a large percentage of special needs kids, but I don't think so. And I could be wrong. And I just think it's really, really dangerous for us to continue to create pathways toward a lesser goal.
There certainly aren't one-third of our students in Baltimore City who have special needs.
I don't know what the number is. Okay, we should probably move along. Thank you so much for the presentation of the data. We appreciate it.